As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
I am recording.
Gladiators already. What was his name? John Anderson. Yes, it was. Not the John Anderson, but it was a John Anderson. George, you may go on my first whistle.
2 seconds, Alice has just come out. I'm just going to shout down to see I'm just about to record the pod. So,
right, has anybody got anything to say about Chris?
Hello, just about to record the pod.
Prick. Little prick. Little sausage
okay,
love, prick.
You all right?
Sausage
prick. Sausage prick.
Oh, hi, Chris. He's such a lovely lad, though.
I just love working with him. He's he's one of the great guys in football and journalism. Hi, Chris, you're back. Great.
Very good. Right. Hello, I'm Taylor Payne. Welcome to Pod on the Tyne, the Athletic's Newcastle United podcast. And it's been a tough week. Fatigue has kicked in. Fitness issues abound and tempers have begun to fray, and that's just the Pod on the Tyne team. George Corkin is here. How are you doing, George? You all right?
Yes, I'm still stuck in London's fashionable London district.
Oh, lovely, in the Borough of London.
Yes, thankfully I've escaped the travel mayhem because I came down on Saturday, but God, I really feel for those people who struggled to get down yesterday, and then some couldn't get back last night because late trains were cancelled, and what a bloody mess in the middle of the day, i.e. Newcastle United playing football. So,
absolutely.
Not good. How are you?
I'm all right, George. Yeah, I'm not too bad at all. It's been a busy weekend. I'm feeling a little bit tired of voice, but that's okay. That's fine. It just adds a sort of rough gruffness to the proceedings, doesn't it? Chris Woff's here as well. Chris, how are you?
Are you tired because you felt you had to sort of, like, you know, mirror the team a little bit? Come on, this podcast
fatigue. It's 2 podcasts a week since the start of the season, Chris. It's, you know, eventually it's going to catch up. I'm the only one who's played in every game, you know. Eventually it's going to catch up, isn't it?
This is interesting because I'm sure we'll talk about Newcastle United's away form. I would like to talk about Chris Woff's away form because yet again I'm sent to the wilds of the south to cover Newcastle. Yet again they lose and Chris is going to be pontificating and spouting his usual nonsense safely in the bosom of his own home, and here I am down here. So, Chris, what gives you the right to discuss Newcastle United's miserable away form when your away form is just as bad, if not worse?
Well, I did go just around the corner to Merseyside, as the Premier League seem to think Merseyside is from Tyneside, given every single season they have the game midweek, both legs, basically, both home and away. So, yes, but, you know, that I didn't go south of the Watford Gap.
How insufferable has he become? He was back at Goodison this weekend and crowing. How quickly they forget, these people. Can we just...
Well, he's a glory boy, isn't he, though? He's gone back there. Now they're
glory
winning
hunter,
games.
Yeah.
He's gone back.
I saw the tweet from him when Doucouré scored on Sunday, and it just had, "Goal! Doucouré scores!" And I just went onto Twitter and went, mute. There you go.
Delete, block. That's the end of a beautiful... Could have been a beautiful relationship.
Don't give me attention.
It's finished.
Absolutely. Right, then we'd hoped for a Super Sunday, hadn't we? And the lasses did their bit, more on that later. But it was a soggy, saggy slog of a Sunday for Eddie Howe's Mags and all those fans who trekked down to London to cheer them on. And as George mentioned before, damaged train lines between Peterborough and Grantham down the East Coast main line, and thousands of Geordies travelling to North London had to improvise. Once again, the new ticketing system came into focus and the club missed an opportunity to win some goodwill with a bit of assistance or at least some helpful communications, Chris, didn't they?
Yes, and the Newcastle United Supporters Trust tweeted yesterday morning basically saying that we've been calling for the ability to transfer a small number of tickets for away games just for this kind of emergency. They said they'd spoken to the club and been told there's no contingency for this kind of situation, unfortunately. I mean, that's a very specific focus of this, I suppose, yeah. And maybe it's something the club should look at going forward, but it's just a frustrating situation, unfortunately. These things will happen. If it's in London, then there are such a huge Newcastle following down there of supporters who in theory could go, but yeah, it was just frustrating for everyone that the day turned out how it did and that supporters, I mean, it sounded, if you look at some of the stories of people getting there, awful. Planes, trains, automobiles, the cliche, but the way that people tried and many succeeded in getting there, some unfortunately failed, but I'm sure that there was significant costs that people had to bear, unfortunately, to get there, which is very, very frustrating, but people just want to follow this team, and for the ones who did get there, unfortunately, it wasn't a particularly happy afternoon.
Absolutely not, George. Those away fans will go above and beyond every single week, won't for the team. They will get to the game. It doesn't matter how they have to do it. And it's a shame, isn't it, that this has happened again. And it seems to be football fans who end up bearing the brunt of these issues, isn't it?
Of course it is, because there's absolutely no consideration for travelling fans when it comes to choosing matches for television, for example. Again, you know, this is not an unusual kickoff time, 4:30 on a Sunday, except that it always puts pressure on people trying to do the game in a day, trying to do it on the trains. It means a rush back afterwards. And again, as I said at the start, you know, those late last trains were cancelled. And the Premier League, the broadcasters do take travelling fans for granted because they know they'll travel. Just one very quick kind of quick thing on Newcastle and their kind of response to it. And you sort of mentioned communication. There were a couple of tweets from the sort of main club account yesterday, things like en route to the capital, safe travels to everyone making the trip to Tottenham this afternoon, and London calling and things like that. I mean, completely and utterly innocuous, and you know, we're not having a go at them particularly, except that it didn't quite read the room when, you know, Newcastle fans were really, really struggling to get there. And yeah, there does, I mean, we know that the ticketing issue is a work in progress, and we know that there has to be some real sort of serious, you know, serious examination of what they can do. It's not fair that people who can't travel are then unable to give their tickets to mates who might be able to go. You want the away end to be full and bouncing. And yeah, I mean, it was just, it definitely put that into sharper focus. Well done to everybody who got there yesterday. And yeah, I'm just sorry you had to witness that performance.
Yeah, there'll still be a lot of lads and lasses stranded in London today as well, won't they? Who've probably had to take days off work and that kind of thing. And we don't consider all of that at a time. So going south proved very difficult for the fans, but things went south quite quickly for the team, didn't they, Chris? Despite a couple of early chances.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Newcastle started poorly for 5 to 10 minutes, and then I actually thought they got a bit of a foothold in the game. I thought early on Bruno had a few nice passes. Joe Linton started quite well. There was a lovely ball in behind for Anthony Gordon, which created the chance for Alexander Isak. Already Gordon had won the ball high and misplaced a pass to Isak, who would have basically been clear in the box. It was had a similar issue at Everton, where the sort of the high press worked at times and they nicked possession, but then decision making in the final third wasn't there. And the Isak one, I mean, it was a wonderful ball in behind by Joe Linton. Gordon carries it, maybe carries it slightly too far, but equally it's not really his fault. He puts the ball across, and I didn't think Isak looked, he was almost waiting for the ball to come to him, and obviously that gave Davis the ability to flick the ball onto him. And it just, Isak doesn't quite seem right at the minute. I mean, he's come back and had to play 5 matches in succession, haven't had an injury which kept him out for a month. That's not me digging him out, I'm just saying it hasn't been the perfect return for him in terms of the football he's had to play. And after about 15-20 minutes, I thought suddenly Newcastle's midfield, having functioned all right early on, looked like it was almost running in treacle. They were just getting overrun at certain points, weren't tracking runners. And yeah, once Spurs took the lead in quite disappointing fashion in terms of that Udogi coming inside and runners not really tracking, Kieran Trippier gets done by Son, the ball comes back and Udogi scores. Bruno Guimaraes doesn't follow him, Lascelles doesn't really gamble at the front post and try and clear it. And then once Spurs took the lead, I'll be honest, I didn't see Newcastle coming back. They did have moments in the second half, which we're going to come on to, but it's just they've only picked up 1 point from losing positions, as I said on the podcast the other day, and it just felt like it was a long way back already by that stage.
It certainly did. Spurs boss Big Ange lamented his squad's injuries after the game. I'll read Ange. But they were only missing two or three first-teamers, weren't they? And it showed. They looked brighter, sharper, stronger and snappier across the pitch, didn't they, George?
Totally, yeah. No, they were by far the better team. I mean, he also expressed empathy and sympathy for Newcastle and Eddie Howe and sort of... I mean, he made quite an interesting point, which is that if you take two big players out of any Premier League team, they're going to suffer. And I think we're seeing a lot of that this season, actually, that the gap is closing between a lot of teams. And as soon as you're missing one big player, two big players, three big players, you're going to struggle. And Newcastle, of course, are missing far more than that. But Spurs were very good. I mean, I've sort of tried to express this. I did a bit of this last week as well, that, you know, we have to have a lot of sympathy for the management staff for the playing staff in particular, who are putting their bodies on the line and getting through it. At the same time, Newcastle really weren't very good against Spurs. The same as against Everton. We know that there's a kind of reason for it, we know that there's really good excuses for it if you're looking for it. But they've set their own standards as a team and a club, and if they want to be judged as a big club, as a big team, which they are and they do, then you know it is okay to look at that performance and say that's not good enough. And again, there's no sort of crying within the first team setup. They know that. Eddie Howe knows that. You know, the injury suspensions, they're there for everybody to see. But as he said yesterday, even if they're having to adapt to that, they should be able to find a way to get a result, to get a win. There are other ways to win games. I thought it was interesting. Newcastle were clearly playing on the counter-attack at the start. They've got the pace to do that in Gordon and in Isak and others, but they weren't able to follow that through. So, it was just a really bad day at the office all round.
Well, I agree with George, and I do agree with a lot of the critique out there that large parts of performance weren't acceptable. I've seen a few supporters start to say, we can't keep talking about fatigue. We said it was fatigue the other day. How can it be fatigue this match?
They're still fatigued.
Fatigue doesn't work. Yeah, it doesn't work in terms of fatigue doesn't just suddenly go. They're played on Thursday night and then it comes on the Sunday. And that's not me defending all parts of the performance. I agree that there were parts of it which they should have been far better. They are making basic errors, although I also think that is to do partly... and this is not me fully excusing, but partly I do think that's to do with mental fatigue as well. I think not taking some of those big chances, both at Everton and Spurs, I think that's because they're not as mentally sharp as they have been, as well as not being physically sharp. And then when the game gets tough, they are struggling and they are making incorrect decisions like Kieran Trippier did at Everton on Thursday. And so I think that compounds one another, and the fact that it's just, you just have another game coming up straight away and another huge match. I mean, to go to Spurs today and then and then go to Milan and play Milan on Wednesday. These are huge matches, both of which really do affect Newcastle's season. And so I do think that as much as we can't just write off anything and say that it was just fatigue, I also think that we can't just keep saying, oh, they can't just keep using it as a fatigue as an issue. It's not like they've had a week or 2 weeks rest in between these matches. It has been compounded. Those same 10 players have started, the outfield players have started all of those games. And they probably haven't fully shaken off mentally what happened at Everton, for example, and then they go to Spurs and then you have to go again. I just think that's very, very difficult. It's very, very difficult to just say we can't just keep saying it's fatigue, because I do think that is a huge factor within this.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Absolutely, yes. And as at Goodison Park, another decent spell straight after half-time went up in smoke, didn't it, with an avoidable goal for the hosts. We're lucky that they didn't get complete revenge for that 6-1 mauling at St James's Park last season. Georgia could easily have ended up that kind of scoreline, couldn't it?
It certainly could, yeah. And again, as Chris sort of alluded to, it was big moments at either end of the pitch. Newcastle just weren't up to it. They didn't take their chances, and then they didn't prevent Spurs' chances, and so they got what they deserved. But on that subject of fatigue, I do want to sort of talk about that a little bit, because I've sort of written about that in what I've done post-match. And one of the things I've looked at is not just about these starting players, it's also about the subs that Newcastle are able to use. And the fundamental way that Newcastle approach games has changed and has had to change because of these big long list of injuries. So yes, it's been a source of controversy, or a little bit of controversy amongst fans, about why Howe hasn't changed things between games, but also he's not changing things in games. Let's take Spurs away a bit, because in the end we saw Callum Wilson come back, Sean Longstaff come back, and then he put three other players on, so he made five subs. But listen to this, because I think this is quite interesting. In the first four matches of this season, including that hammering of Aston Villa, he used five subs four times. So in every game he made five subs. Until Tottenham yesterday, he'd only used five subs once in the last four matches. And the players who were coming onto the pitch in those first four games of the season, substitutes coming on were getting an average of 18 minutes per game. In the last four games, not including Spurs again, they're getting 2.5 minutes per game. You know, there was that theory at the start of the season. Attacking players were being given 60 minutes, 70 minutes to absolutely have a blast,
yeah,
to run as far and as fast as they could, to give everything, to press, to push, to harry. And then they were getting replaced by players of similar quality. Whereas now, those options just aren't there. And he was asked a bit about this post-game. It's like, why aren't you making more changes? And it was like, well, I want to make changes that can have a positive impact in the game. In other words, he doesn't feel the players that he has on the bench or that could be selected in place of the others could do that. So, in other words, if you're asking Alexander Isak, who Chris mentioned, to play for 100 minutes or 90 minutes, you're going to get a very different Alexander Isak from one who can play 60 minutes. I mean, Howe said their intensity hasn't been there for the last two games. That's not something that they've done on purpose, but it's the way it's ended up.
But I also think, I mean, the personnel you mentioned, George, you didn't actually go through the names, but you talk about those players who were coming on those first few games. Harvey Barnes comes against Aston Villa the opening day of the season, gets an assist, gets a goal. You've got Sean Longstaff coming onto the pitch.
Yeah.
You've got Jacob Murphy coming onto the pitch. You've got all the actual personnel who are coming on and changing the match. Callum Wilson's coming on. Whereas it's actually a bit of a misnomer, that stat they used about you used five subs for one of the games last few weeks, because
Chelsea.
That was actually against Chelsea when he brought on three debutants as under 21s, two of whom were basically an injury time to waste a bit of time. So even then, that sort of isn't really representative of it. And I think that it has significantly changed everything you can do. If you look at I mentioned this on Friday, what he did at Everton was basically, rather than bring people off the bench, he tried to move around his front three, and he did similar to begin with. I mean, he actually moved Alexander Isak from striker to left wing again at Spurs and put Gordon through the middle in the second half. And that in itself, you say Alexander Isak, we've seen he can play on the left, but basically every Newcastle fan really would tell you, or vast majority would say, he's better through the middle. But at the minute it isn't working, and so they're having to switch that around. Gordon really fundamentally has been most effective when he's been out wide, but he's trying to change things with the players who are already fatigued, who already played those matches and see, can I do something a little bit different here rather than turn to his bench? Now, that then brings us back to squad depth and who Newcastle signed, and should they have signed more midfielders? Should they have done this? Should they have done that? Obviously, Sandro Tonali's situation, the big thing, which has changed a lot as well. But that's the position he's in, where basically he has 10 or 11 outfield players. Now he's got Wilson and Longstaff back, but he only really trusts them to materially affect these matches, and that is affecting them significantly.
Yes. Here's a little question from listener Gav. He sent this in after the Everton game, by the way, so to be fair to him, he wasn't to know that both fullbacks will be subbed on Sunday. Both fullbacks being played into the ground, yet Hall can't get onto the pitch. We're obviously riddled with injuries, and a player who can play in multiple positions, doesn't get a kick. Does the obligation to buy have a clause dependent on the number of games? And Howe has decided he doesn't fancy him, so we've got to keep him under that figure. George, any ideas about this?
Well, I'd like to sort of address the first bit first. So, not for the first time, Eddie was asked about this after Spurs, and obviously Hall did come on against Chelsea. And the way he answered this was to say that Tino Livramento has been excellent at left-back since Dan Burn's injury, and I think most of us would agree with that. And he also praised Kieran Trippier, you know, de facto captain, even when he isn't captain, the standard bearer for Newcastle since the takeover. He said all those things. There's been a lot of people calling for Trippier to have a rest, particularly after Everton, and clearly he needs it. But Howe also made the point that if you take Trippier out of the team, he'll come out anyway against Fulham, of course, but if you take Trippier out of the team, you're losing your biggest threat on the pitch, that side of the pitch, with Trippier, you know, Trippier's delivery, Trippier's set pieces and free kicks is Newcastle's biggest attacking threat as well. So you then lose that. You don't just lose. So he made those points first and then said on Lewis Hall, he has got to make an impact when he comes on. And the inference there is clear that, as far as I'm concerned, it was anyway, that impact just hasn't happened. Now, it's a fact that Lewis Hall has been hooked at half time, and three of his starts for Newcastle, that has felt a little bit harsh at times, but at the same time he hasn't made enough of an impact. Sometimes it takes players longer than others to settle, and I think that's certainly what I'm reading into that. When Howe was asked about not being able to make changes, he says, I want to make changes that benefit the team. And again, the inference from that is he doesn't feel that the resources he has at his disposal would strengthen the team. In fact, it would make the team weaker. So that's why he hasn't been making... He doesn't want to write off matches against Everton or against Spurs. You know, yeah. He doesn't want to prioritise one game ahead of the other, particularly in the bread and butter of the league. And that's why he's done it. Now, in terms of the contractual situation, I have to just be honest and say, yes, I've heard those rumours. As far as we were concerned in the summer, it was a loan with an obligation to buy, and that was done and settled. Yeah, I've heard the rumours that there might be clauses, but I don't know. I don't know about that. And I don't think that would stop Howe from playing him now either. I mean, he has said himself, when you're looking at Anthony Gordon, when you're looking at other players who've brought in, some have taken longer to adapt to what he wants than others. And I don't think Hall has had long enough yet to be able to, you know, to write him off.
In terms of the contractual situation, I agree with George. I don't know the specific ins and outs of it, but ever since this deal happened, everyone on all sides has spoken as if that this is the permanent, or they expect it to be permanent. Lewis Hall spoken about basically leaving Chelsea. There was a bit weird that Chelsea's wording was slightly different than Newcastle's when it actually was announced, but everyone at Chelsea is basically speaking as if that Lewis Hall's leaving, because for them, for FFP, it'd be quite important that they get that money this upcoming summer as well. And Newcastle, the way Howe speaks about him is long term, and it hasn't worked out for him yet. But you also have to remember that Lewis Hall, he's seen as a sort of senior player, but he's 19 years of age and he's played fewer than 20 senior matches in his career exactly. So far as well. Yep. So he is, I know you can look at it and be like, well, Lewis Miley's in the team and he's performing well, or Tino Livramento's not that much older. But Tino Livramento's basically 2 years further on his development. And also Miley partly is in the team because he's had to be, and he has stepped up. But Lewis Hall hasn't yet taken those opportunities. But that doesn't mean that you sort of write him off at this stage. And clearly he isn't doing what Howe wants him to do yet. But we saw with Anthony Gordon last season, it took him 6 months to get used to what Eddie Howe wanted before he really came through. Lewis Hall, it may take a bit longer, and things may not work out longer term, but I don't think at this stage Newcastle have suddenly written him off.
No, and just to go again, I'm just sort of remembering as Chris speaks, when when they made those two deals, and when people were questioning why Newcastle had invested so much money on two young fullbacks in the summer as opposed to strengthening other areas of the team, the message that came back was that they'd tied down, you know, right back and left back theoretically for years to come, and there's a theory, you know, that they would have England's right and left back partnership. Not that people particularly care about England, but you know, that was very much the thinking, and that was very much the theory. Lewis Hall is an exceptionally talented player. He's shown that, you know, until the moment he's joined Newcastle, it hasn't been there for him. It hasn't looked like it yet. I think he's trying very hard, but you know, he wouldn't be the first. He wouldn't be the first player to struggle to adapt to what Eddie Howe wants. He arrived very late in the window. It's not like he had a long pre-season with Newcastle, and so yeah, we've got to give him time to settle and to make his mark. I'm sure he will.
He's come into a difficult situation as well, George, hasn't he? You've got to remember, it's not like he's just come in, he's getting minutes here and there, and Eddie Howe's able to bring him in gently and just slowly bring him into the team and develop him. He's been thrown in at the deep end a couple of times, you know, that Dortmund away game, Man City in the Cup, stuff like that. The lad has been chucked in when maybe he's normally he wouldn't have been. So I do feel for him a little bit, you know, and totally. I understand that the levels are maybe not quite there yet, but like Chris says, he's a kid and his development will come. It's just going to take time, isn't it? It's one of those.
And again, I mean, the same thing applies to the kids who are who've been on the bench for the last kind of few matches too. Again, I've heard that sort of thing. What, you know, you should just give them a game if they're on the bench, you know. You know, why not just refresh things, give them a chance, they've got young legs and run. But I mean, you know, there are several points about that. I mean, firstly, they have to be ready, and you know, there are huge doubts. You know, Lewis Miley has come in and been exceptional, but he is exceptional, that's the whole point. And the others may not be ready, and I don't think they are. And then the other part of it is whether by thrusting them into a very difficult situation, whether you risk sort of jeopardizing their long-term development. That's another thing too. And I think the same thing applies to someone like Lewis Hall. He is still very young. He's getting to grips with a new club. Ideally, this is a relationship that lasts for years and years. And so you have to take a step back and think about it in those terms. Everybody's very grumpy at the minute because Newcastle have just lost two away games very heavily. But there is a bigger picture, and that bigger picture was part of the justification for what they did in the summer. We don't feel it at the minute because things are very tough. And if they'd, you know, if they'd signed players in different positions who could have gone straight into the first team, then perhaps Newcastle wouldn't be in the position they're in. But you know, again, this is also part of dealing with multiple competitions and trying to get to grips with it. And in lots of respects, Newcastle have thrived and done very well with it. Certainly in terms of personnel, they have not.
Yes, absolutely. And speaking of feeling grumpy, Callum Wilson wasn't very happy with Spurs keeper Vicario, was he? Here's a little bit of audio from Callum.
There's a way to win, isn't there? I think we've seen it in the week when Everton were winning and Pickford was messing around. You know, the goalkeeper, but a header, he starts pulling faces and messing around, and this is a lack of respect, I thought. But I said my piece, we're grown men, when we move on.
Is that reaction fair enough? or do perennial shithousers eventually have to take a bit back, Chris? People are going to enjoy beating Newcastle, aren't they? Let's be honest.
Yeah, I mean, for Callum Wilson, I do think it's a little bit of pot calling the kettle black because he is someone who quite likes to wind up opposition players. I mean, he has his sort of podcast, doesn't he, with Mikel Antonio, and he did that celebration after scoring last season. I think that it's... Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily do that, but I obviously, I'm not a very good footballer, so I wouldn't be in a position to do that for a start. But also, that's not my sort of... That's not the way that I sort of conduct myself, but I don't necessarily...
It's not the way you conduct yourself. What? You quite often pull faces at me when we're working together on this podcast. I mean, you pull
always
faces at me.
V's.
What are you on about? That's not the way you would act. Who are you? Mr. Dignified? I don't think so. What are you on about?
I was going to make a comment before, actually, because Taylor, as you were speaking, giving a long soliloquy about Lewis Hall before, opened the door to let the George that we prefer out of his room. And clearly he was just bored, George the dog was just bored of listening to you, George. But anyway, on this point, no, I think it is fair enough. I mean, there was the Jordan Pickford stuff the other day as well. I think that if you give it, you've got to take it to a certain extent. And I can understand why. I think Newcastle are just frustrated in general, everything going around them.
Yeah, I think it's fair enough. It's totally fair enough. If, you know, Jordan Pickford is a Sunderland fan, former Sunderland player, if he can't get excited and happy about beating Newcastle, then there's something seriously wrong with the world. It might irritate us as Newcastle fans, but I mean, that's what football's all about. We love that. And exactly. He gets baited absolutely all the way through matches. And
when you've got Jacob Murphy waving players exactly. off the pitch when they've been sent off.
Exactly. I mean, you so really if you reverse those situations yesterday and it's Martin Dubravka, you know, Newcastle are winning, Martin Dubravka's pulling faces at Son, for example, I mean, we would all be laughing. There would be constant memes. It would be brilliant. You know, Newcastle are there to be, you know, last season when Jacob was doing all that kind of stuff, or the season before, Newcastle were the underdogs. They were having a great time. They were shocking the Premier League. They were catching them unawares with not just the brilliant way they played, but also with the way they gave everything for a win. And, you know, that puts a target on their back. So, yeah, if you give it, you've got to take it. So I totally understand Callum Wilson, who's great, being upset with that. But Newcastle have done that kind of stuff so much to other teams.
Absolutely. Right then, time to move on, chaps. Happier news. We mentioned the Lasses earlier, and they did fulfil their part of the bargain in making it a Super Sunday in Gateshead, at least. 5-0 winners in the FA Cup third round against Stoke. Katie Barker and Anna Soulsby were rampant down the left-hand side, and Bridget Galloway continued her great season in front of goal. They'll find out their fourth round opponents on Tuesday the 12th of December at around 9:30 a.m. And you'd imagine there'll be a few Championship clubs, maybe even the odd WSL outfit, who don't fancy pulling Newcastle out of the hat. Strength to strength, George, for the Lasses. They keep marching on, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, a massive, massive win that. Yeah, I mean, I just think that it would be brilliant, wouldn't it, to get a big club, big team in the next round, see how they go.
Chelsea or a Man City.
Yeah, as you say, I don't think anybody would want to play Newcastle in this form, and it would be brilliant to see them tested against the kind of club that they want to be in the next 2-3 years. So, huge congratulations to them, and brilliant. Yeah, long may it continue.
Fabulous stuff. More happy news as well. You can give your loved ones the gift of The Athletic this year for Christmas. Go to theathletic.com/NewcastlePod before January the 1st and choose between £19.99, that's pounds, dollars or euros, for a one-year subscription, or £39.99 for 2 years. And if that's not value, Chris Woff, I don't want to hear it. That's amazing value.
You always come to me for this and I never have a response. So yes, it is.
I know, and that's why I keep doing it, because I think one week he's going to chip in with some little nugget of advertising gold, and it never is it? A little nugget of advertising shit, usually, that's where it is. You got anything to say for yourself?
No, you can just read George Culkin on The Athletic if you want to. That's there you go.
Yeah, well, who wouldn't want to do that?
Give your family the gift of Chris Woff for Chris.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Right then, chaps, Wednesday night at St James's Park, the Champions League is back. Is this, Chris Woff, the biggest game in the history of Newcastle United? It's a big shout, but it very well could be.
I don't think it's the biggest game in the history of Newcastle United. I mean, we could all go back to the David Kelly game and the likes. I mean, that's long before my time, but I think in terms of... So I don't think it's quite that big, but I do think it's huge, a huge match. I think it's huge in the context of Newcastle's season, given everything that's come before, given what they could do by going through and the financial ramifications potentially of that. As much as it's frustrating for me to talk about football all being about finances, a large part of it is, and for Newcastle in particular, unlocking FFP it is, and if they get further in the Champions League, then that could aid them for January and beyond. But particularly after the deflating defeats at Everton and Spurs, for Newcastle to potentially go through the so-called group of death and qualify from the Champions League and get into the last 16, I think would be huge. I think it would give them a boost going forward as well. And mercifully, it's at home, because at home, Newcastle are very, very good.
Yeah.
Away from home, they are really struggling. I mean, I say that, their most recent Champions League match at home, they did actually lose 1-0 to Dortmund, and that was the sort of the one really flat performance I've had at St James's all season. Other than that, almost exemplary, barring 10 minutes against Liverpool. That's the only defeat they've had in the Premier League. They've won the last six in a row in the Premier League, obviously beating Manchester City as well at St James's Park. And so I think it will be, although we expected a big atmosphere for Dortmund, didn't quite arrive. I think that this one, given everything that's come before, given the magnitude of the match, I think this will be a very, very special evening at St James's Park atmosphere-wise.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a tone setter, isn't it? I mean, I think what happens definitely sets out the debate for the next chunk of matches this season. I think it's difficult to say it's the biggest game in the history. What I would say, though, is that PSG at home turned out to be one of, if not the best matches in Newcastle United's history, recent history, however you want to put it. And it was an absolutely phenomenal, phenomenal occasion. It's something that will live with us forever. What I want is for that match to have some meaning other than just being a great night at St James's Park, one of the best nights. And everything's up for grabs. They've got a chance to get through. They've got a chance to stay in Europe, and I think that's important. The irony is that it would probably do Newcastle a favour to have less games to play at the moment, but this is the club they want to be. They want to be playing in Europe. They want to be playing in the biggest competitions. And it's a huge match in the context of just what's been happening in recent weeks. A couple of players are back. That's great news. They have a chance to, you know, to have a go, and those players will be needed. Yeah, I think it's a massive, massive, massive occasion. I think we can make a judgment on it afterwards, really, see what happens. But it's a massive game, and it should be brilliant.
Wolf Lags with big plans again as well for the day. Atmosphere should be electric, as Chris says. We've got to hope that re-energises the players, don't we, Chris? And that group is in such a precarious situation where I think I'm right in saying every single team could still qualify depending on the way results go. It's got a potential to be a barnstormer, hasn't it?
It has. I mean, all eventualities are possible, certainly for Newcastle. I mean, if Newcastle can finish any of the positions from second through to fourth, which means they can either go from through in the Champions League, or they can drop in the Europa League, or they can be out of European competition altogether.
Yeah.
Now, as we've mentioned before, it's quite simple, this now, as to what has to happen. Newcastle have to win to have a chance of going through, and then they need Dortmund to do them a favour in Dortmund against PSG. If Newcastle win, I think they then have a very good opportunity of going through, because PSG are struggling away from home. If Newcastle draw, then they will be in the Europa League. If they lose, then they'll be out completely. And that's to do with like head-to-head and the like. With Milan, it would go down to goal difference, and Newcastle's goal difference is going to be better than Milan's after this match. So I do think that the atmosphere can re-energise the players. But I also think that, as I mentioned, the St James's Park factor, I think it's both the home fans and what they give to Newcastle, but I also think Newcastle have a very defined way of playing at home. They know what to do, whereas away from home at the moment, as we mentioned earlier, maybe they're caught between stools a little bit, given the, and that's probably been exacerbated by the injury crisis and the fatigue, as to they don't know whether to go full throttle, they don't know whether to sit off a little bit, whereas the onus on them at St James's Park is to basically attack when they can and to smother opposition sides, and that's what they do well, and I think that that's what we will see on Wednesday. Whether that's enough to beat an AC Milan side who are going through a difficult period themselves, we will wait and see. But I do think that at St James's Park, if this game was away, I would fear for them. At St James's Park, I do fancy Newcastle to have a very good opportunity on Wednesday.
I think that's fair enough. And I was also going to say, you know, okay, the last two games Newcastle looked knackered, but you only have to go one game further back, and the Man U game, Newcastle were excellent. You know, obviously against a poor Manchester United team, but they were brilliant. They were exceptional. They found a way to respond most of the time. I mean, that's one of the great things about this team: the resilience they've shown, the ability to bounce back. Just when you're at the point where you're thinking you might write them off, they dredge up a result, because they've got this incredible bond, and they've got, you know, and they're also very, very good. I hope that the combination of crowd and reinforcements coming back and just the magnitude of the occasion is enough to kind of get them through it. I agree with Chris. I think this game is there for them. It's easy for me to say watching on the sidelines, but you know, I would always back this team to come through. And yeah, I mean, on a huge night like this, I think this is where they show what they're made of.
We touched on this on Monday as well, Chris, didn't we? But should Eddie Howe throw the kitchen sink at this one? And just damn the Premier League form. We withdrew some important figures towards the end of that game, didn't we, once the result was pretty much tied up. Is it worth just throwing everything at this? Because it's
he throws everything at every game. But just to jump in, go on, Chris.
Yeah, no, I was going to make exactly the same point. I think Eddie Howe has one way and one way only, and we can argue as to whether that's worked over the course of the last few weeks, and maybe Newcastle have suffered as a result of that, but that's why he's been so successful at Newcastle and why he was so successful at Bournemouth for so long. And he will. This is the next game, and that is the cliche in football, but that is how Eddie Howe looks at it, and this is a massive opportunity. And he won't be thinking of Fulham yet. He only allowed Newcastle to start. If I was the manager, and thankfully I'm sure everyone will agree,
absolutely,
I'm not.
Absolutely, yeah. Nobody needs that.
At half-time at Spurs, I would have made changes. And actually, Newcastle's best 15 minutes came after half-time, and they actually held on to the ball, because in the first half they were terrible and couldn't hold on to the ball. But they held on to the ball a little bit more. They hadn't written it off at that stage. And he waited, really, until the game was fully gone before he withdrew players. And will that have a knock-on effect for Wednesday? I hope not. But yeah, this it will not be what's happening on Saturday with Fulham that will be occupying his mind. He's thinking, how can I beat AC Milan on Wednesday? This is the team I'm going to send out. This is the plan to do that. And whether that means that it's a very similar situation where it's the same 10 outfield players, if Callum Wilson or Sean Longstaff are ready to come into the starting 11, can they come into the starting 11? Or do they come on slightly earlier or in a similar time to they did at Spurs? No, this is the only thing in Eddie Howe's mind is Milan, and that there'll be no questions whatsoever on that.
And again, I've sort of seen a little bit, or certainly in response to like the piece that I've written today, people saying, oh, he should have made changes for Spurs, he should have sort of done that. This is, you know, I think this kind of gets to the heart of the matter. He's not going to ever rule, you know, write off a game at Tottenham. I mean, the Newcastle going forward have to try and win every game in the Premier League. I mean, and from his perspective, he doesn't feel that the people that he has in reserve at the moment are good enough to win matches, which is why he stayed with the same 11. The data, the stats they've shown is that those players were okay to play, they wanted to play. And again, I'm sort of repeating myself, but that thing is, he said, if I make changes, they have to be positive changes. And he hasn't, to his mind, he hasn't had the resources available to make a positive change. So he attacked Tottenham with the aim of trying to win it, or certainly not to lose it. Of course he will do the same thing against Milan. He has to. I mean, Newcastle have to win the match. So that's, you know, that's the first thing. They can't sit back. And it's the way Newcastle approach every game. He's been able to make kind of big changes for domestic cups because he's felt he's had no choice, like most other Premier League managers. But you can't rest players for Champions League games. You can't rest players for Premier League matches. I totally understand that.
Absolutely. One key figure for the Rossoneri, Rafael Leao, is back in training after a bit of a hamstring injury. He's a huge player for them, isn't he, Chris? And he caused absolute havoc at the San Siro. Kieran Trippier is going to need to be back at his very best.
Yeah, I don't think Trippier will be fancying that from a defensive point of view, given the last couple of matches. And he didn't have much protection, let's be honest, at Spurs, and Son, certainly first half, had a lot of joy against him. But yeah, Leao did play very well. He's a huge player for Milan. But I also think this is, as I said previously, I think this is about what Newcastle do more than anything. I think if Newcastle perform to their levels, Milan will find it difficult at St James's. But Newcastle didn't perform to their levels against Dortmund at St James's, and at that very top level, the elite level, they suffered for it and then lost away at Dortmund, which is why they're in this position now where they have to win, and even then that might not be enough. But this Milan side has struggled in the Champions League so far this season, but they are experienced at this level. Obviously got the semi-finals last year, part of the reason why Sandro Tonali ended up at St James's Park after Newcastle saw him and worked with him. I mean, we're sort of doing a piece at the moment looking at Sandro Tonali and his situation ahead of Wednesday, when he would have, in an alternate reality, he would have been starting Newcastle's big Champions League signing, starting against his former side, yeah, on Wednesday, the real key figure within the match, and instead he isn't there. And so, yeah, I just think there are so many storylines and so many little bits to look at with this Liao against Trippier, Tonali not playing. Can Newcastle play the same 10 outfield players again, or Longstaff and Wilson ready? Are any of the other players going to be back? Could Botman or Barnes be in and around the squad come Wednesday? We don't know the answer to those questions yet, but I do think, as George said, this is a tone setter, and I think it could have a big impact on how Newcastle season so far is viewed, because I think if they don't get through in the Champions League, and certainly if they finish bottom of the group, I think suddenly this last week is put a very negative tinge on what for large parts has been, I think, a positive season, given all of the adversity Newcastle have had to go through.
Yes, I would agree with that. Well, I think that's just about it, unless there's anything else, George?
No. For what it's worth, Eddie Howe was asked about Harvey Barnes after Spurs, and he said that he wasn't the closest player of Newcastle's injured players to be coming back.
Interesting.
But, as we also know, Eddie Howe isn't necessarily the biggest truth teller.
He's a fibber,
when it comes to injuries. We'll forgive him that, but I just thought I'd throw that in there. No, I mean, it's a massive, massive game. Things feel deflating this morning, but come Wednesday night, I know St James's Park will be absolutely raucous, and it has the potential to be one of those occasions that, you know, stretch down the ages, doesn't it? And we all, you know, I'd Newcastle absolutely, as a team, as a club, are at their best when everyone rallies round together, and I know that'll be the case on Wednesday, us against the world. It's a very powerful, very powerful thing.
Yes, St James's Park will be bang up for it. Right then, that's it. Feel free to get in touch at Pod on the Tyne on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it, and email us at podonthetyne@theathletic.com. That's it for this episode. Thank you very much, Chris.
You're very welcome. Do you need to go and have a lie down, Taylor, and get yourself prepped and ready for Wednesday? You need to get your mind back in it, and you need to forget for fatigue.
If only
mental,
we had quality coming off the bench, I could have been rotated ages ago, couldn't I? But if you take me out of this,
crying out for rotation,
me out of this starting lineup, the whole thing's just going to fucking fall apart, basically. We're crying out for replacements.
We've both had a go at presenting when you've been poorly or whatever. It didn't go well, Taylor. So I'm sorry. We're flogging you, but we just don't have the options. Don't have the legs.
I feel like Kieran Trippier, I really do. Right, thank you very much, George, as well, for your time.
You're very welcome. Yeah, see you at St James's.
Absolutely, that's it. Thanks very much from everybody at Pod on the Tyne. Have a good week. We shall speak to you on the other side of that AC Milan game in the Champions League. Take care, have a lovely week. Bye-bye.
Athletic.